Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have John Huddard as my special expert guest. John Huddard is an electrical project manager specializing in high voltage substations on large industrial projects. After completing his electrical apprenticeship, he continued to work on many construction projects spanning over four decades. John is also a high-end sports performance coach and master's athlete. In addition to coaching and participating in several extreme sports, including hang gliding, mountain biking, and sport bike motorcycle riding, John teaches alpine ski racing, where he helps young athletes achieve their best personal performances. John lives in Vernon, BC, in a beautiful log cabin nestled on a mountainside that he built himself. Good afternoon, John, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update.
Thank you, Corey. I appreciate it.
It's good to have you on the line, my friend, and let's have a little chat here about some of the stuff that you're into and see if we can't translate that into some magic for our listeners. Now, everyone wants to know a little bit more than just the stock options on the guest. So give us some personal background. Where are you from? Where did you grow up? And how did you get into electrical project management?
Okay, I was born in Calgary. My parents lived in Banff at the time. I was my mom's third cesarean, so it was a trip to the hospital. We lived in Medicine Hat till I was about 12. And then we moved to Prince George for a couple, 3 years, and then the Lower Mainland after that. Once I graduated with an electrical apprenticeship, I moved to the Okanagan, to Vernon. My father had his own electrical business, and he got the job of right after World War II, wiring the first chairlift up Norquay. And he was a soccer player from Scotland, and he had to learn to ski to finish the electrical work. So that's how I got into that sport.
What about the electrical part? Now, sometimes fathers want their sons to follow in their footsteps, and they feel pressured by that. Did you have that experience, or were you just naturally attracted to what your father was doing? Did you have an aptitude and a keen interest in electrical activity?
It's interesting because when I was a kid, my dad had his own business, especially in Prince George, and on summers and weekends and stuff, I'd help pull wire in schools and things like that. And so as I grew up, the last thing I was going to be was an electrician. And I just decided after graduating from high school that I'd take electrical apprenticeship for a while and do that as a method of making money and then go into something else, which I hadn't decided what that was yet. And it just stuck with me. I didn't want to do any foreman role. I just wanted to work as an electrician. And then I got thrown into a foreman position, and that rolled into estimating and project management as I went down the road.
Right on. So now let's get into the extreme sports that you still participate in and have a great amount of experience in. What is it about extreme sports that for you attracts you, but for other people it frightens them? What is it about that kind of sport activity that really turns your crank?
You know, it's interesting. I ski raced as a kid, so, and that was a development from about 13 on to 18, 19 years old. And in that process, we raced downhill. I would go in at 80 miles an hour on courses. And learning this was a process. And I think that I never looked at it as an extreme thing. I looked at it as something that I did. And certainly there was fears to overcome. But it always seemed that you took one run, and then you took a faster run, and then you took a faster run. And I remember there was a race at Whistler called the Whistler Cup, and it was the front side downhill, which they now call the Dave Murray downhill. And there's a section in that course called the Weasel. And you go into it about 30 miles an hour. It's a steep pitch with a kind of a big step in the middle of it. And you come out at 80 miles an hour. And then you go into a fallaway turn and a big G-force turn. And just skiing that was unbelievable in what it took to prepare yourself for that. And I think that made everything else easy in what you call extreme sports by going through that.
Okay, let's get into one that I'm really attracted to as like an ideal way to let myself fly in the air. I mean, hang gliding. Let's talk about hang gliding, because I've always loved hang gliding. I've never really done it. I've looked at them, you know, with awe and admiration floating around in the air. You got into it. So tell us how you got into that. Tell us what evolved in your life in terms of running a school or coaching or whatever you did? And what's it like for you to be up there in the sky for hours on end?
I mean, hang gliding, I was introduced to, I was skiing down in Aspen, Colorado, and it was first thing in the morning and riding a chairlift, and this contraption flew over me. And I couldn't believe it. It blew my mind. I looked at this guy flying down the ski hill and thought, I have to get off this chair and get down to the bottom of the mountain and look at that thing, which I did. And once I got back to the Vancouver area, I started investigating manufacturers of gliders. There was a company called Mueller Kites, and I bought one of them and started to learn self-taught. We're talking 74, 75, somewhere in that range, 1975. And went to a hill, had a buddy of mine that wanted to learn as well, and he had a parachute that he traded in on a hang glider, and we basically self-taught on how to fly. The sport was unsafe at that time. Gliders were not safe. We didn't know anything about weather. We didn't have any backup parachutes. Click forward many, many years, and the gliders got, you know, a whole evolution of better flying machines, safer machines, parachutes as backup equipment, faster machines, all that kind of stuff, and handled so much better. So the sport did evolve, and I have to say, you know, if you do a 3-hour flight, it's like 3 weeks of time or 3 days of time. It was so much packed into that 3 hours of every second was another minute or hour in time of how much went on. And certainly I had my incidents that happened. I did break a wrist one time landing back on top in high winds. I did join a very small, prestigious club called the Upside Down Club, where I got barrel rolled upside down in a storm in October, kind of like this time of year right now, and fell several thousand feet before the glider righted itself. And I managed to land it more or less. I did break a few parts, but the storm was huge and horrific. It didn't stop me from flying. It just thought, you know what, I need to know more about weather. I always looked at the sport as that if you walk across gravel street and you don't look both ways, you're going to get run over. If you follow the rules with hang gliding, make sure your glider's safe and strong and set up properly and all your equipment's set up properly and the weather's prevailing, then you're safe.
What about the fitness of hang gliding? You know, you just climb on the thing and float, but is there any particular fitness, kind of fitness that would be an advantage to hang gliding?
Yeah, I think, you know, you have to run off. Depending, sometimes when the wind's blowing, you take one step and you're in the air. There's not a lot of upper body strength required to move your weight around. I think more fatigue from duration in the air, mental fatigue, and that equates to some physical fatigue as well. But, you know, you get the glider weighs 65, 75 pounds, some of that range, depending on what it is. So you got to pick it up. You got to set it up. You got to move it around in the landing zone and the takeoff zone. So you need good core to be able to do that safely without injuring your back and that kind of stuff. So, but not a huge amount of fitness for it.
Right. Let's talk about mountain bike riding now, because that one does need a lot of fitness. You invited me. We went for a great ride over by Ellison Park there, and I really enjoyed it. I don't get out on a mountain bike that often, but you're really into it at the highest level. Let's talk about that as a form of fitness and the equipment that you need if you get into that sport, and just talk about how big this sport is for those that may not know.
Yeah, mountain biking, I started about 35 years ago when it was in its inception to be able to ride in the dirt. The bikes didn't have any suspension. They were all rigid frames, and we were young, so we could take the abuse. The evolution, in especially the last 10 years, has been unbelievable, and even in the last 5 years has been unbelievable. And what they've designed in bikes and how well they ride, and carbon frames, carbon wheels, 29-inch wheels that roll over rocks easier. Yeah, the evolution of the sport and the volume of people. When we used to ride, there was nobody there but us. But now I go to an area to ride, and it's packed. The parking lots are packed, and kids are in the sport. And it's grown unbelievably large in the last 5 to 10 years. Again, equipment works very well. The latest is electric assist. So what that takes now is there's a little drive motor on your crank system. And now instead of riding 20 kilometers, you're going to ride 50 kilometers. If you're going to climb 3,000 feet, now you'll climb 8,000 feet and go all day. So that's just another step of evolution. The world is riding bikes. Europe, the ski areas. I have a friend of mine that builds bike parks all over the world now. He was instrumental in starting the Whistler Bike Park, which is jammed with people every weekend. I mean, I got into the sport originally to stay in shape to ski, and then it became another addiction. Absolutely love climbing. Spend 2 or 3 hours climbing up, 15, 20 kilometers, and then coming back down. It's a peaceful way. It's a really good cardiovascular exercise, good for your legs. Not a lot for your upper body, a little bit for your upper body, but more cardio and leg work. So, the sport is unbelievable how it's going now.
Yeah, it's a neurological tap as well, because when I was riding, I really had to pay attention so that I wouldn't flip over and wipe out. So every time you go around a corner and you got this balance thing, you have to sort of lean forward and then go back, right? So that's got to be good for you and I as masters athletes, because that type of need to adjust is not common when we're sitting in front of a computer.
Yeah, no, and balance is really, really important. And it's something maybe I take for granted because I do all sorts of different sports that require balance. But most definitely, especially when you're riding over rocky terrain and rough terrain, we ride at night, we ride with headlights. So every Wednesday night we will go out tonight and hook up with the guys and put a couple sets of lights on and then your balance. Everything gets more difficult at night in the dark. And I kind of call the sport my anti-Alzheimer's pill, because it really forces you to focus on the terrain you're riding through and ensure that, you know, you never look at the rock or the hole. You always look at the gap that you're trying to go through with your front wheel. So it's kind of an automatic thing. If you're looking at where you want to go, the bike will go that way.
Very cool. Okay, let's move on to the next extreme sport, which is another one, sport bike motorcycle riding. Now, that is a blur, I guess, on the screen, but I know you really like this and you're really into motorcycles and group riding. And so tell us about that. Tell us about the kind of bike you have and how you got into this.
Yeah, I got into the sport at a young age, at probably 13, 14 years old. Motorcycles were, you know, really attractive to me. And it was just like taking your bicycle and having power so you can go faster. And so I rode a lot as a youngster. I rode a lot right till I was into my 20s. And then I got out of it for a while. I got into the sport of hang gliding and didn't ride motorcycles too much anymore. Actually, I rode into my 30s, pardon me. And then I got back into it about 6-8 years ago. Motorcycling, like sport bike riding, is a lot like skiing. It's a lot like skiing giant slalom or ski racing giant slalom, where you're laying the ski over into a big long arc while you're laying the bike over into a big long arc on the road. So there's a lot of similarities with balance and pressure on the tires and pressure on the skis and line interpretation, huge similarities. The bike I ride is called the Buell Ulysses. And it's an interesting bike made by Eric Buell. The frame, which is quite a tubular thing, holds the fuel, holds the gas. The swing arm holds extra oil. It's quite short, so it handles very, very quickly. And it's very stiff. It's a 1,200, 105 horsepower motorcycle, so lots of torquey power. Just a fun, fun thing to ride, thoroughly enjoyable. And you can go do a trip for days or go up for an evening ride for 3 hours. Just a very, very easy thing to do. And a lot of high-end business people ride motorcycles because they can't think about anything else but that bike at the time. So it's a real stress relief, which I find it a fairly major stress relief when I'm on the bike and again, thinking about the road, the surface, the corner, the line that I want to lay it into, when I'm braking, when I'm not braking, when I'm accelerating. It's a lot to think about. So certainly definitely a stress relief and an enjoyable sport.
No kidding. Certainly looks that way. I have a little bit of a background with motorcycles and I've always enjoyed riding them. I love the speed and the rush you get. Now let's get into skiing, but let's get some preamble on this. Let's talk about our experience chopping wood. The reason is because of what that means to you when you're all done and finished, when you've got the wood in the shed. So tell us that story and how that's connected to skiing.
Well, it's interesting. I've been getting firewood for decades now, and it's become a process that I start, late summer, early fall, and going up on the mountain, dropping standing dead trees and bringing them down and splitting them and then getting them into the shed area. So that process, when the wood's in, then I'm ready for winter. I'm excited about skiing and I kind of shut down all my work activities and the winter's about skiing.
Right on, man. That's good. So the first time you skied, I assume that you enjoyed it. And tell us about your evolution in the career of skiing, like becoming a coach and teaching and that kind of thing. Because you got up to a very high level of certification, didn't you?
Yes. I learned to ski at a place called Cypress Hills, which is just outside of Medicine Hat, Alberta. Just a small little rope toe and rubber galosh type boots. We used to go to Banff because of my parents lived there when I was born for every Christmas and every Easter. And then at about 11, 12 years old, we moved to Prince George and I joined a ski club called the Hickory Wing Ski Club. And I had a coach by the name of Bill Wanacott and started racing at that point. I raced there for a couple of years and then I moved to the Lower Mainland and started racing for the Grouse Mountain Ties. And I raced until I was about 19 years old. You know, at 19, they looked at if you weren't going to World Cup, then they suggested that you do other things. And with my nature, they said, why don't you coach? So I got involved in coaching, ski coaching, at a little area called Hemlock Valley in the Lower Mainland. I coached there for a couple, 3 years. And at that point, I got into hang gliding, and it took my skiing enthusiasm away for a while, for about 5 years. And I used to spend my winters in California flying and then up in the Okanagan in the summer. A number of years later, I got a job working on a ski hill and worked that for a number of years and then fell back into ski coaching. And I ski coached for another decade full time. It was a 5-6 month a year job for me and used that experience to work with high end athletes, which was really gratifying.
What do you like most about working with the athletes as a coach, as opposed to being the athlete, being coached? What's the difference for you?
Well, the one-on-one with the athletes, you develop a really close relationship, which is bonding. I have athletes that are my friends now. They're in their 40s and going into their 50s, and they have their children, and their children are ski racing. So there's a whole evolution of that. I think in all the years of coaching, I learned to shut up. And what that means is, we want to express things by talking. And sometimes coaches talk too much, call it verbal diarrhea. I know athletes used to call it the no coach. You choose your words very wisely. You choose your environment very wisely. And you say them at the right time, or you show them at the right time. It's really important, I think, for a coach to learn how each individual athlete learns. Not all learn by voice. Some learn by doing. Some learn by pushing them into that body position and showing them. So first thing you learn, how does that person learn? And then secondly, you got to apply that. A little story, I was coaching in Japan with a group of New Zealand kids, and there was about 8 of them, and I didn't know them at all. So I went in there, and it was on a low slope, hard snow mountain, and I set difficult courses. And I didn't say anything to them for about 3-4 days. And they struggled. And they all had problems. And they hated me. They didn't want to do it anymore. They weren't having any fun. And then I got up one sunny morning and I set a really nice course, just a perfect slalom course, easy rhythmical turns. And I told them each one thing. And the light came on. They could not believe how that change came for them. And I still keep in touch with some of those kids now. Again, our adults, and they said that was the best coaching experience they ever had.
That's a great story, man. There's nothing like that kind of feedback from the athletes about their coaches. What about the athletes themselves? What qualities do you look for or that need to be present in order for you to take an athlete to the next level, to make the bond and make a good connection?
They have to have desire. They have to really, really want it. And they have to have some natural abilities that go with that. So I look at it like a farm boy usually knows how to work hard. So he's probably pretty good in the gym and will work very, very hard at that. Early skill development. You know, there's some athletes out there that they figure skated as little kids, and figure skating on the ice gave them a really good sense of balance on skis. They developed a skill at a very, very young age that carried them through into their ski racing. But end all to be all, they really, really have to want it, because ski racing is really a tough sport. It's not an easy one. The very few good days you have where you perform and you do your personal best or you actually get on the podium are few and far between, and there's a lot of days when it's a struggle. And you have to push yourself through that. And I look at it for myself and my son ski raced, that you develop a skill in that sport that hopefully will carry you safely through the rest of your life. And I look at it that if I'm driving down a highway, a snowy highway, and a logging truck is coming towards me, and he breaks loose and starts sliding sideways, I don't think, I just intrinsically move to save myself. And that's the same as going down that Whistler downhill when you go into the Weasel and you got to make a turn on a fall away. You don't think about it, you just do it. And that skill development in ski racing is a very, very high-end skill and an awesome one to have to carry you through your life.
Oh, absolutely, no doubt. Now, thinking of myself as a hammer thrower and comparing that event to what you do, both what we do, there's a lot of intensity and there's a lot of speed. But the difference in my mind between what you do and what I do is the wipeout factor, like the hang gliding and the motorcycle, the mountain biking, the skiing. All of these sports imply a risk of wiping out possible injury or even death. So that would prevent some people from doing them. But are you attracted to them because of that, or are you attracted in spite of that to these sports?
I look at the risks and what you have to do to minimize them or eliminate them. And that's a process that I do. So probably the one that's riskiest on crashing is mountain biking, because the rocks and the terrain are so variable. So speed comes into it. Your attention comes into it. So again, if I'm not on it, then I slow down. Some days it feels good. I don't even think about wiping out. Like in hang gliding is certainly, like I said, you follow the rules and you're careful with those rules, then you're going to remain safe. And there's so many pilots out there that have been flying for decades that are safe pilots. Same with a motorcycle. If the roads are wet, then I slow down. I don't take the risk on that. Skiing wise, you know, I'm still falling skiing, not very often, but I do crash, and it all depends on what terrain you're in. When it's softer snow, then the falls are easier. When it's harder snow, they're a little more difficult to take. Like I'll talk about skiing a little bit. When it's the best feeling is when it becomes effortless. When you have a day where you're flying down through the powder and the bumps and your balance is on and you don't have to think about it, you just feel. And that effortless feeling is, I think, the thing that I search for and try and repeat those days, those runs, those turns as much as I can, because that feeling is so gratifying.
Yeah, no doubt, man. I can relate to that for sure. When it looks easy, when you look at the athlete making it look easy, you know they're having a fun time, a big smile on their face. Now, you do a lot of different extreme sports. I'm sure that there are other people that you know that only do one or two of them. Is it common for people to do all of these sports, or is that unusual? Are you kind of unique that way? Because your eclecticism, your connection with these four different sports, is that unusual or is that common?
It's a bit unusual to mix the hang gliding in there. I have friends that they're ski racing friends or ski coaching friends that mountain bike, we got into that together, and now some of them motorcycle, because the crossover between motorcycling and skiing is so similar, and mountain biking, it's all two-wheel balance work. But when you throw the hang gliding in there, I'm the only one in that category that I know of anyhow.
Okay, we're coming near the end of our conversation. It's been great. Some great insight on these different sports. Let's talk about you and what you're doing. Like me, and you're in your 60s and you're concerned about wellness, longevity, health, function. Do you have a specific strategy that you follow besides these sports? What are some of the life principles that you live by with wellness in mind, John?
Well, you know, it's interesting. At 66 years old, I'm probably in better shape than I've been in for quite some time. And, you know, I struggle with back aches and stuff like that. And about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I started doing a morning exercise program where I'm doing 100 sit-ups and 50 push-ups and chin-ups and stretching. And I do that every day. And that's become a habit. And So I can pick a chainsaw up and drop a tree and bucket up on the mountainside, and it doesn't bother me. I'm also taking supplements, and I'm taking some Chinese herbs that help my testosterone, because as we get older, our body wants to turn testosterone into estrogen, and that just makes us fat and lazy. So those supplements have really helped me on that end. Lost some weight, feeling strong and feeling fit, and looking forward to the next 20 years and still skiing the bumps, still riding the bike. I'm sure it'll be electric as we go down the road, electric assist, and not stopping anything as I get older. Just continuing to do it because, one, the enjoyment that you get out of it makes you want to repeat it, and two, the health benefit from doing that. And the mental state, I think that there's a huge mental state in doing these sports that carries you through. And when things get difficult as we get older, lots of times our brains can struggle with life and all the changes in life. And I really think it helps to control that or to work with that.
Yep. I think I really get the connection now between the electrical engineering and these sports. They all electrify you. They all illuminate your brain and body with electricity, as I've experienced myself. So there's that connection. That's wonderful. John, it's been great speaking with you. Thanks for being my special guest on this month's edition of SNU.
My pleasure, Corey, for sure.
We will let you finish off with a final statement. What about people your age? Are they all as active as you, and why not? What would you tell people about not using their age as an excuse not to be active and aggressive in these kinds of extreme sports?
Myself and another fellow, the old guys in the group, most of the guys are in their early 60s or in their 50s. And I think the camaraderie, the relationship for friendships, the getting out and doing things, doing it as a group, really helps to motivate. If you're doing it by yourself, say you go mountain bike by yourself, which I enjoy doing, but I really enjoy doing it with a group of people. And I think that people connection really, really helps to stay motivated to continue on, because myself and this other fellow, his name is John as well, and we call him the lung because he's unbelievable on a bike. We motivate those younger guys, and I'm motivated by riding with the younger guys. So it's a great mix of group activities that keep me going for years down the road.
John Huddert has been my guest on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. John is an electrical project manager, a high-end sports performance coach, and master's athlete engaged with things like hang gliding, mountain biking, sport bike racing, and alpine skiing. John, thanks so much for your contribution. We really appreciate having you as our guest on this edition.
Thanks, Corey.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com or call us toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 1-866-433-1595. That's 1-866-433-1595. This is Scott Barrett, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.
Represent your lifestyle. New way of life. Listen. It's SNU, sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight. Malik with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life, live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHawley.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see a change in heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.